three things. The final frontier.
The revolution will be broadcast.
So, how you doing?
How you doing?
There is a fine line between genius and
three things.
Hey, kids!
There's a touch of madness around.
Three things.
Well, welcome back, partner.
With my little stick in my highly evolved brain, I shall create
three things.
There we are. I prefer to handle this limb.
Alert the troops. We attack
three things
at dawn.
Well, this is all very sophisticated.
If you believe in miracles, love at first sight, and breakfast in bed, contact me for adventures in
three things.
How may I, in all humble servitude, be of assistance?
Three things. Three things. Three things.
Behold the glory that is
three things.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
Hello, baby.
Hello.
Hello, gentle listeners. Both old and new. It's me, Jenna, your hostess. I'm happy you joined me today for the show, as I always am. Most gratified, I assure you. Today I have just some of the neatest stuff to talk about. Again, I thank you all for listening and hope you enjoy this episode, number 40, of Three Things, at least, and stuff. Y'all know how I love our natural world and how I love to share things about it, so that's what I'm going to do now. Sharing is good. Did you know that frogs have a tympanic membrane, an eardrum, on the outside of their head, and that part of their hearing is in their lungs? Their lungs resonate sounds and give a little froggy a clue as to which direction to jump in order to avoid danger. Cool, huh? Sea otters always float on their backs when they eat. They also pick up rocks to use as tools to help them break open the shellfish they dine upon whilst floating. Polar bears look white, but they actually have black skin. Snakes always keep their eyes open, even when they're asleep. I think that's one of the things that creep some people out about snakes. It's one of the things I personally find wonderful about them. Aardvarks can hear and smell termites and ants, even down deep in their lairs. Cobras are able to kill with a bite as soon as they are born. The pistol shrimp catches its prey by scaring the heck out of it with a loud banging noise made with its claws. Baby Amarobia spiders eat their mothers when they are born, and I think that's just sad. Ants can detect small movement through 5 centimeters of earth and can see polarized light. I didn't know that before. That's pretty cool. Bats can detect the warmth of an animal from about 16 centimeters away using its nose leaf. That's the little why their nose looks funny, because it wiggles around. Mm-hmm. They can also find food, consisting of course of insects, up to 18 feet away and get information about the type of insect using their sense of echolocation. And this is helped along by the fact that they can hear frequencies between 3,000 and 120,000 hertz. The retina of a buzzard has 1 million photoreceptors per square millimeter. They can see small rodents from a height of 15,000 feet. I can't even see a car from that high. God. An earthworm's entire body is covered with chemoreceptors. Taste buds, that is. A falcon can see a 10-centimeter object from a distance of 1.5 kilometers. Their visual acuity is 2.6 times better than a human's, and they can see sharp images even when diving at 100 miles per hour. That always makes my eyes water terribly, so I don't know how they do that. That's amazing. Catfish have 3 or 4 pairs of whiskers, called barbells, to find food. The catfish also has approximately 100,000 taste buds. We humans only have 10,000 of those. The star-nosed mole uses its fleshy star nose for hunting. That odd-looking nose has 100,000 nerve fibers that run from it straight to the brain. This is almost 6 times more than the touch receptors in the human hand. Seems we're lacking in a few places there, humanity. A scallop has 100 eyes around the edge of its shell, and all of these eyes are probably used to detect shadows of predators, like starfish. And speaking of starfish, it's a pretty interesting creature for all its simplicity. Its arms are covered with light-sensitive cells. Light that projects on an eye spot on each arm causes the arm to move. And if you've ever heard and wondered if it were so that starfish do not have brains, well, that's true. At least it doesn't have a real brain. It does have a well-developed nervous system with thousands and thousands of nerve cells. This nervous system enables a starfish to do all of the tasks it has to do, including searching for food, feeding, finding a sexual partner, and orienting itself. It can even learn. It is also true that it has no heart, poor loveless things, but that probably saves starfish as a species a great deal of money at Valentine's Day. But then they're also small enough not to need one, starfish. All the nutrients they need can reach every part of the body by simple diffusion, so they also do not need a real blood vessel system. Sounds convenient, but boring as heck. I say vive l'amour. You gotta have a heart for that. Okay, that's all I have to share right now. I am finished with this thing, thing number one, for today. And now for the GWOD, grandiloquent word of the day, today. Our word for today, November 10th, 2006, begins with the urbane, the very metro, the only slightly bumpy letter N, and that word, deliciously enough, is numerous. It is an adjective. It is spelled N-U-M-M-A-M-O-R-O-U-S, and it is defined as pertaining to someone who spends all of their time trying to make money. A philargist, one who loves money. While I am sure that we all like money to a certain extent, there is always a line, there has always got to be a line, I shall elucidate in my sentence for you. It is more than sad when a man is so numerous that he will make war to make money. I'm just saying is all. You don't have to be some big wordsmith to like to learn and use grandiloquent words like these. Sometimes it's just good fun. You can find just tons and tons of them on the Grandiloquent Dictionary online, the link to which is on the homepage of this show, threethings.podomatic.com. Numerous. It's kind of like the word vacuum. If you keep saying it, it loses all meaning. Odd that. Numerous, numerous, numerous.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. He sat in the meadow a-shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Their feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, there came a young lady. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass. She pulled up her dresses and showed us her ruffles and laces. And white fluffy that wax, she said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and learn them to knit. While the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt, while the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the fellows, as girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass, and hurry back home for a nice piece of ice cream and cake that stood 3 layers tall. And after dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock with any young man with a sizable roll of 100s in a big bulge up front. If he'd ask politely, she'd show him her little pet dog who was subject to fits. then maybe she let him grab hold of her small tender hands with a movement so quick. Then she'd bend on over and suck on his soda so sweetly till she finished it. Then pull down her panties to rub on her hip that she bruised when she ran down the halls. 'Cause he tried to force her to lick on his candy so tasty made of butterscotch. And then he spread whipped cream all over her cookies that she had been baking all night. If you think this is dirty, you're fucking well right.
So, do you know where your children are? I mean, where your beer is? Well, Dutch beer maker Heineken wants to make darn sure they know where their beer is, so it has put together a team that includes IBM and the University of Amsterdam to track their beer from space by satellite. Beer Living Lab is a pilot project that will track 20 beer containers shipped from the Netherlands to Heineken's UK distribution center. Each container will be outfitted with GSM, GPRS, and global positioning systems. Satellite uplinks will be provided due to particular technical problems with RFID, which can only be read when the tag is close to an RFID reader. I guess Heineken is getting tired of mucking about with the 5 billion documents it generates each year, what with all that international shipping and stuff. Satellite tracking would help speed up deliveries and cut costs. The company hopes that this pilot program will convince manufacturers, shippers, retailers, and customs to move to a paperless trade environment. This is great for shipping, not to mention it being great for the trees of the world. I'm sure they are thrilled at the concept. But what about beer tracking for the average bud row out there? Well, it happens that there is a mobile fridge that tracks its own position by sonar and OCR webcams. You see, professors work hard, and they deserve refreshment. So, at the Machine Intelligence Lab at Benton Hall at the University of Florida, these drinks are served by Coolio, the autonomous refrigerator robot. Here is a typical day in the life of Coolio. Dr. Nichiba is in an important meeting with a future client and has a sudden urge for a Diet Coke. He logs onto the network and tells Coolio that he would like a Diet Coke. Coolio receives this signal through its wireless card and determines the room number needed. It then leaves its docking station at the MIL lab and proceeds to the hallway. It navigates the hallway with a variety of instruments, including sonar for accurate long-distance coverage, infrared for close obstacle avoidance, shaft encoding for accurate navigation once the location is determined, and web cameras for reading room numbers off the wall. It locates room 326, wherein Dr. Nichiba is having his meeting, delivers Dr. Nichiba his Diet Coke, and thus averts disaster. It then leaves the room and returns to its docking station to recharge and wait for the next call. Science fiction writer Harry Harrison wrote about a robot bar in his 1965 tale, Bill the Galactic Hero. Anyone remember that? For all of you out there in Wonderland who prefer sodas and might be feeling a bit left out by this fancy high-tech tracking of beer, you can console yourselves with a programmable soda that lets you turn the contents of specially designed cans into exactly the flavor you want. Ipafini Incorporated has created choice-enabled packaging technology to be presented at the PIRA conference in Stockholm, Sweden at the end of this month. Ipafini's programmable liquid containers use buttons on the container's surface that release additives, as in flavors, colorants, or fragrances, etc., into the liquid. These additive buttons let the consumer choose different versions right at the point of consumption, like literally right on your lips. A programmable cola bottle with buttons for lemon, lime, vanilla, and cherry flavors, as well as a caffeine button, allows for 32 possible choices of soda. Dr. Todd Wolf, founder and president of Ipafini, noted that virtually everyone who has seen our programmable liquid container technology is fascinated and excited by its usefulness and consumer appeal. It's just like Jeff Noon wrote about in a short story collection in the late 90s, Pixel Juice, I think it was called. Neat, huh? So, you probably think that scientists and food techies are maybe finished catching up with these visions of science fiction writers, but you're wrong. food pioneers should take a look at John W. Campbell's synthetic food dispenser and Frederick Pohl's food factory and get cracking. And actually, hardworking food technologists have already caught up with Robert Heinlein's microwavable food, and scientists are just about ready to mass produce, yuck, cultured meat straight from the vat for real. So, yeah, science fiction fans, start your grills. Two new techniques of tissue engineering may lead to affordable production of lab-grown cultured meat for human consumption. These proposals were published in the June 29th issue of Tissue Engineering, that's one I don't have a subscription to yet, and are the first peer-reviewed discussions for large-scale production of cultured meat. Science fiction authors like Frank Herbert in his novel Whipping Star and Larry Niven in a Draco Tavern story wrote of this idea decades ago. And we are not talking about reprocessed meat like beef jerky. This is a system that actually grows meat without a living animal. Just add nutrients for the cells and they multiply by the millions. There would be a lot of benefits from cultured meat, says doctoral student Jason Matheny, who studies agricultural economics and public health. For one thing, you could control the nutrients. For example, most meats are high in the fatty acid omega-6, which can cause high cholesterol and other health problems. With an in vitro meat, ugh, that sounds so gross, you could replace that with omega-3, which is a healthy fat. Experiments with fish tissue done by NASA have created small amounts of edible meat. However, the NASA experiments were done on a very small scale and are not suitable for large-scale production. The technique suggested so far by the authors is to grow the cells in large, flat sheets on thin membranes and then to stack them one on top of another to increase the thickness, and growing muscle cells on small three-dimensional beads that stretch with small changes in temperature. These cells could then be harvested and turned into a processed meat like nuggets or hamburgers. Fat cells would be added for flavor, and the meat would need to be stretched or exercised to give it the familiar texture. I'm kind of grossed out a little bit, can you tell? Just think of the possible benefits though. China's demand for meat doubles every 10 years. In 2004, the population of America, which at that time was 293,027,571, ate 63-ish pounds of beef alone per person. That is 18,460,736,973 pounds of meat in one country in 1 year. I mean, holy mackerel. Just think about this new food technology. With a single cell, you could theoretically produce the world's annual meat supply, and not to mention, but I'm going to, give the poor cows a break. No wonder they go mad. No, I know. That isn't what mad cow is, but it was funny to me at the time of this writing, so there you are. And there is the light at the end of this thing, thing number two for today. I'll let you know as soon as you can buy a fakey fat burger. I promise. Yay! Now it's time for This Day in History. I love these. People born on November 10th include Martin Luther Eselben of Germany. He founded Protestantism, was born on this day in 1483. 1683 is when George II, King of England, was born. 1730 saw the birth of Oliver Goldsmith of Ireland. He was the novelist and dramatist. In 1759, on November 10th, Friedrich von Schiller was born in Germany. He's the guy that wrote Ode to Joy. 1861, Robert Innes was born in Edinburgh, Scotland. He is the astronomer who in 1915 discovered Proxima Centauri. In 1889, Claude Rains was born in London. He is the actor who played The Invisible Man. I loved that movie. Some people who died on November 10th are, in 1865, Henry Wirzem, a Confederate prison superintendent. He was executed on this day for excessive cruelty. 1982, Leonid Brezhnev, Soviet First Secretary, died of a heart attack at age 75. Also on this day, in the year 461, St. Leo I ended his reign as Catholic Pope. 1674 saw the Dutch formally cede New Netherlands to the English. In 1775, the United States Marine Corps, of which my daughter is a proud veteran, was established by Congress. 1864 was the year that Austrian Archduke Maximilian became Emperor of Mexico. In 1918, the independence of Poland was proclaimed by Józef Piłsudski. 1919 was the first observance of National Book Week, a week that has always made this lady very happy, by the way. Yay, books! 1928 saw Hirohito enthroned as Emperor of Japan. In 1951, the first long-distance telephone call without operator assistance was made. Look at us now. 1954 was when the Iwo Jima Memorial was dedicated in Arlington. Also in 1954, Lieutenant Colonel John Strapp traveled 632 miles per hour in a rocket sled. I don't know why, but he did that. In 1960, Senate passed the landmark Civil Rights Bill, and thank goodness for that. 1969 saw the premiere of Sesame Street on PBS TV. In 1970, Luna 17 with unmanned and self-propelled Lunokhod 1 was launched. 1975 was the year that the ore ship Edmund Fitzgerald and her crew of 29 men were lost in a really bad storm on Lake Superior. In 1980, on this day, Dan Rather refused to pay his cabbie, and CBS paid the $12.55 fare. Cheap guy. 1989, the Germans began punching holes in the Berlin Wall, and they punched and they punched until the wall fell down. Also in 89, WordPerfect 5.1, which wasn't so much mumble mumble, was shipped. Insofar as religious history goes, here are a couple of interesting doodads. It was 1770 when French philosopher François-Marie Arouet, most know him by his pen name, nom de plume, François Voltaire, then 75, uttered his famous remark, "If God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him." And in 1871, following 7 long and arduous months of searching, foreign correspondent to the New York Herald, Henry M. Stanley, succeeded at last in locating Scottish missionary David Livingstone in Ujiji, Central Africa. Stanley prefaced his encounter with these words, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume. I just feel happy inside now that I know the date that that happened. I don't know why. I hope you, perhaps, were made a little happy by my sharing some of the stuff that happened on this day in history. If you did or didn't or had something to add, you can do so on the homepage of the show, as always, 3things.podomatic.com.
The changes in the military fostered by the Clinton administration have provided the opportunity to create an elite new fighting force, the Big K-1. Their mission? Nail Saddam Hussein.
Well, who does this, Nails, anyway?
Yeah, quiet, soldier. Listen up, man. We'll be leaving for Baghdad from Fort Dix.
Ooh!
Let's go. Oh, my gosh! It's Flash!
Roberta Flash? I love her!
We're here!
We're on fire!
We're flaming! And going down.
Ooh!
Be with us again next time when the crack soldiers close in on Saddam.
Oh, no, sand. It's a good thing I wore my combat thong.
On the Big K-1.
You know, each night as you sleep, your brain buzzes with electrical activity. Neuroscientists suspect that this activity helps solidify memories formed during the day. Now they've bolstered their case. Researchers have shown that electrically stimulating the brain during sleep can enhance memory performance the following day. Many previous studies have linked sleep and memory, Waking people up during the slowly oscillating pattern of brain activity known as slow wave sleep, for example, makes them perform poorly on tasks that require remembering recently learned facts. If these slow waves really do have a role in making memories stick, enhancing the waves might enhance memory, reasoned neuroscientists Lisa Marshall and Jan Born of the University of Lübeck in Germany. To test the idea, Marshall, Born, and colleagues recruited 13 medical students for a sleepover in the lab. Before settling down for the night, the students studied pairs of words and pairs of figures, learned to tap a sequence of keys on a keyboard, and practiced drawing figures while looking at a mirror. Then each student was fitted with electrodes that allowed the researchers to record their brain waves and stimulate their brains through their scalps. When the electrodes revealed that a student had drifted into slow wave sleep, the researchers turned on the stimulating electrodes for about half an hour. The idea was to provide low-frequency stimulation that enhanced the brain's natural slow waves, Born says. The same 13 students also spent another night in the lab in which they went through the same routine, minus the stimulation. Although the students weren't able to tell whether they had received the stimulation, memory tests given the following day revealed a difference. After stimulation, students showed a modest but consistent improvement in the word pair and figure pair tests compared to their scores after a non-stimulated night's sleep, the researchers report. Their performance on the typing and drawing tasks wasn't affected by the stimulation, however. The research adds to growing evidence that different types of memory gel during certain stages of sleep at different times of night, says Robert Stickold, a neurobiologist at Harvard University. But Stickold doesn't foresee a future in which people keep brain stimulators by their bedside tables. While he concedes that the idea is way cool, Stickold suspects that evolution has already done a pretty good job of optimizing brain activity during sleep. Tweaking it further isn't going to do all that much good for you, he says. Have you ever wished you could just turn up the gain on your brain, just getting a little more juice before a tough exam or a big experiment? Scientists have now managed such a feat in rats, boosting their performance on a memory test by electrically stimulating a region deep inside their brains. This technique is unlikely to ever be performed on healthy humans, but the researchers say it may prove useful for people who've suffered strokes or other brain injuries. Deep brain stimulation has been used for years to treat people with Parkinson's disease. More recently, researchers have reported encouraging results for treating depression. And just last week, a team reported a promising case study in which a man in a minimally conscious state recovered some mobility and responsiveness. Yet, very little is known about how deep brain stimulation works. That's changing through work on lab animals. A team led by neurobiologist and neuroscientist Daniel Herrera at the Weill College of Cornell University in New York City implanted electrodes into the central thalamus of rats. This brain region is thought to help mediate arousal and is the region surgeons targeted in the minimally conscious patient. After stimulating the rat's central thalamus for 30 minutes, Herrera and colleagues found that two genes, one linked to neural activity and the other linked to cellular mechanisms of learning, had become more active in the rat's brains, including in the cerebral cortex and hippocampus. The stimulated rodents also explored more than unstimulated rats did and performed substantially better on an object recognition test. It's a significant finding, said Rodolfo Linas at New York University, but don't call your neurosurgeon just yet. Herrera cautions that more work is needed to determine how long the benefits last and what the side effects are. Besides, he adds, the ultimate goal isn't to make healthy people smarter, it's to help neurological patients. Those most likely to benefit from the procedure are stroke or head injury patients, whose brain damage is more stable than that of someone with a progressive disease, such as Alzheimer's, Herrera says. So, as intriguing as the thought may be, wait until they perfect this whole brain stimulation before you have it done and stuff. Don't go plugging your AC/DC converter into your ear holes. That won't work, and it might hurt, like it hurts me to end this thing number 3, for today. And that's pretty much the whole deal for this episode of Three Things. I, Jenna, your hostess, hope you liked it. If you did or didn't, you can leave me comments on the homepage, threethings.podomatic.com, and I will thank you for them. Heads up, there are two music shows coming up in December. I have a couple of really talented fellas out there that I would just love to spotlight, so that's what I'm gonna do. I'll let you know more about them as the time nears. It's good stuff, I promise ya. But like I said a minute ago, this episode has reached its conclusion. I hope it entertained, educated, enlightened, or even explained something to someone, somewhere. That is always my wish, you know? So I'm going to stop procrastinating now and just go. I'll see you all next week. Maybe you can take the lull as I walk away as the time to look inside of yourself, take a good look, highlight the things that are good, and lighten up the things that are not. Take stock. Realize you're a human and therefore deserving. Then forgive yourself and be happy. Good day.
That was so thrilling.
Missed it by that much.
Happy trails, Spaz.
Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another happy ending from the good people.
Three Things
Incorporated. Done, sold, Bob's your uncle.
Just smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave.
We got it! We got it! Yes!
Now it's your turn.
Make love and be merry, for tomorrow you may catch some disgusting skin disease.
Goodbye, good luck, and good riddance.
I will accept nothing less than
Three Things.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, this is dreadful.
I'm chanting as we speak. Bye-bye, darling.
Dismiss. Shove off, you old trout.
That wasn't flying.
Three Things.
That was falling with style.
And I didn't like it one bit. It was disgusting and violent. I think all you people are despicable. I say!
We're putting that bitch on ice.
I promise nothing.
Back to the lock with ye, Nessie.
There comes a time in every friendship when you have to say, I never liked you, get lost.
All right, that's it for me. You've been great.
Help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.